Well, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I actually did not like cartoons. I didn't really like them as an adult either, but I definitely didn't like them as a kid. That just wasn't my thing. Obviously, many of you are going like, well, duh, right? That we could have told that about you, Kyle, because of your lack of imagination and creativity. But anyway, I did watch some cartoons, and though I didn't like cartoons generally, there was one cartoon in particular that I really, really didn't like. Like, I always had to fast forward through it. It might be the most horrific cartoon that there has ever been made, especially from Walt Disney. And that cartoon is Pinocchio. And there's one scene in Pinocchio in particular that is the one that just kind of like gives me the heebie-jeebies, and yes, that is a technical term, where the skin on your back of your spine just kind of crawls and your neck kind of sticks out. Do you know the scene I'm talking about? Pleasure Island. Disney had the great idea to decide to name part of its theme park Pleasure Island, yet it shut down. There was also a theme park in England that was called Pleasure Island. It also shut down. Pleasure Island was so frightening, but it didn't look frightening to at least the boys who were being invited there. See, it was a place where you could go and it looked like paradise if you were a little boy, because there were no rules, there was no curfew. You could eat whatever you wanted. There was candy, there were games. And so when you were invited to Pleasure Island, all you had to do was be invited. You didn't have to be coerced or argued. You just had to be indulged. And you would go. But what would happen on Pleasure Island is that slowly, over time, these little boys would become beasts. And that's the danger of it. What looked like paradise ended up becoming a prison. Last week, we looked at Revelation chapter 13. In Revelation chapter 13, we are presented this beast. And the beast stands for idolatrous power, especially idolatrous power as it comes to expression in government. And the beast works certain way. It works through coercion and exclusion and violence. The beast says, worship me or you will die. Suffer. But here we're introduced to another danger. And this danger doesn't work like the beast. In chapter 17, John is taken off into a wilderness, and in verses 3 through 5, he sees this woman sitting on a scarlet beast, and this woman is arrayed in all kinds of jewelry, and she is beautiful, and she has scarlet on, and we are told that her name, verse 5, the name on her forehead, is Babylon the Great. Babylon stands for human culture and civilization. And it's not just human and culture and civilization. So you have to understand that Babylon is a very ancient city, and it wasn't always called Babylon. It was called Babel. It was the place where humans came together to try to create a world without God, to express their godlike existence in a way that try to establish themselves and a name for themselves without God. And so Babylon has always stood for this kind of human culture and human civilization without God. And it is not ugly. It looks like paradise. It's full of ease and comfort and pleasure. People say that you can catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. I think you can catch more people with pleasure than with pain. And that's why while the beast may have slain its thousands, Babylon slayed its 10,000s. So John's vision is given to break the spell, to wake us up, so that we will not be deceived by her beauty, intoxicated by her pleasures, or swept away in her judgment. So here's what I want us to see this afternoon. We're going to look at Babylon's beauty. John wants us to see that Babylon is beautiful. We're going to look at Babylon's intoxication. John wants to see that Babylon is intoxicating. And finally, we're going to look at Babylon's doom, that it is doomed. And John wants us to see that as well. So first, Babylon is beautiful. In verse 4, when John comes and he sees this woman, she's arrayed in purple, scarlet, and she's adorned with gold and jewels and pearls. Now, in that day, purple was a high commodity, and it cost a lot of money. That's why most of the time royals wore purple and scarlet. And so this woman, she is obviously very important. But also we see that she's adorned with gold and jewels and pearls. In other words, she is affluent. She is rich. There is luxury here and there is beauty here. And everyone in John's day would have seen her and they would have said, that sounds a lot like Rome. In fact, in verse 9, we see that this woman, Babylon, is seated on seven mountains. And Rome was called the city of seven hills. In fact, Rome was often depicted as a woman called Roma, seated on the seven hills of Rome. Because Rome was beautiful, and Rome was affluent, and Rome was the center of civilization. You know, we live in a city that's beautiful, breathtakingly beautiful. I mean, it's hard to go a day, no matter where you live, it's hard to go a day without seeing either an ocean or a mountain. And it's not only beautiful in that way, it's also beautiful just in how it feels. Yesterday I was walking and it was one of those days where the sun is warm on your skin, but the air is cool. Do you know what I'm talking about? I don't even know how that happens. The sun is warm on your skin and the air is cool. And that is, in my mind, that is perfection. We have a lot of those days here. And it's not just in, the air and the atmosphere and things like that. It's also in the fact that what we have built here, I mean, the architecture is beautiful. And the food culture, there's kind of an Epicurean quality of life here. You can go to a wine bistro or get good coffee. There are so many things that this city has. People come here because it's beautiful. It's also affluent. Did you know that between the kind of Goleta, Santa Barbara, Montecito corridor, that the average or median household income ranges from one-third higher to three times higher than the rest of the country? The average home price in that corridor is five times plus, depending on where you are. And get this, the average rent price or median rental income is between 70% and 90% higher than the rest of the country. That's why many of us, we don't feel rich, we don't feel wealthy, we feel stretched and we feel pressed and we're wondering if we can make it. But that's kind of the strange thing, because that doesn't take away the fact, and it's actually a result of the fact, that we are surrounded by wealth. So we have this city that's incredibly beautiful and incredibly wealthy. And I want you to know that none of that is bad. There's nothing wrong with money and wealth. There's nothing wrong with good food. There's certainly nothing wrong with good coffee. There are things wrong with bad coffee, but there's nothing wrong with good coffee. There's nothing wrong with any of these things. It's not evil. But there is a whisper when you live in a place like this. And the whisper is evil. And the whisper says, This is the good life. If you've made it here, you've made it. This is the good life. If you have me, you don't need to have anything else. In other words, it's that whisper that takes the world's gifts and turns it into a world without God. It's the message of Babylon that makes beauty ultimate and comfort necessary. Oh, I need that. And pleasure sovereign, where success becomes our identity. And so John wants us to see that there is more going on than meets the eye. That's why verse 3, we learn that this beautiful woman sits on a beast. The same beast that we learned about last week. And she is holding this cup, a cup that is beautiful, but verse 4, it is full of abominations. And abominations, by the way, abominations throughout the Bible, and especially in Revelation, abominations have to do with idolatrous practice. And that's why these abominations are associated with sexual immorality. Because when you look to Babylon to be and to do for you, when you look to human civilization and human culture to be and to do for you what only God can be and do for you, to provide for you satisfaction, ultimate satisfaction and security, ultimate security and comfort, ultimate comfort. When you do that, well, then you've betrayed your first love. Then you've committed adultery, spiritual adultery. And the allure is so powerful. You want to know how powerful it is? Just look at verse 6. John says, when I saw her, I marveled greatly. John's jaw drops because of her beauty. John is captivated by her. So much so that the angel has to bring him back to reality in verse 7 and says, why do you marvel? And if John could be tempted by Babylon, how much more can we? How much more can we? So we have to stay alert. And his vision is given to wake us up that we might be sober. Which brings us to our next point. Babylon is not just beautiful. Babylon is intoxicating. Verse 2 says that the dwellers of the earth have become drunk with the wine of Babylon's sexual immorality. In other words, people take Babylon's vision of life into themselves and then until they can no longer see. They can't see straight. That Babylon can get you drunk. And even though when you look, it's a golden cup and it looks beautiful on the outside, notice what you are drinking, verse 4. It is full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. In other words, like polluted water, when you take that in, it infects you. It gets down deep. Now think about advertising. Advertising is interesting because most advertisements are not just showing you what's there, what exists. Advertising is teaching you to want something that you didn't even know you wanted. Like all of a sudden you're, you know, doing some work on the internet and there's something on the, you know, on the side that pops up and then you think to yourself, maybe I do need a countertop pellet ice maker. That's going to make my life better. Or you're watching a show at night and then there's a commercial break and all of a sudden you think, has my spiritual, emotional, and physical flourishing been waiting for a Japanese garden knife to use in a garden I don't even have? Maybe it is. Those were a lot funnier in my head. This does happen to us, by the way. And maybe that's why we're not laughing, because we know of how serious it is. But when we take these things in, it infects us and it's contagious. Notice 18 verse 3. Chapter 18 verse 3 says, all the nations have drunk the wine of her passion. All the nations. In other words, Babylon was the envy of the world and spread her influence throughout the world. And everybody's doing it. And everybody's drinking it. And when everybody's drinking it, it becomes especially dangerous. Especially dangerous for Christians. Because here's what happens. What happens is that we can confess the right things. We can still show up for worship. We can get involved in Christian community. We can even read our Bibles daily. But our imaginations of don't know what happened. I'm on. There, we're back on. Our imaginations of good life are shaped more by Babylon than the Bible. And when that happens, Jesus becomes just one more way of getting that Babylon's vision of life. Jesus is a means to Babylon's end. So here's the question. How do you know if you are intoxicated? How do you know if you drank? Well, ask the question, what am I most afraid to lose? Look in chapter 18, verse 11. In chapter 18, verse 11, the merchants of Babylon weep and mourn. Why are they weeping and mourning? They're not weeping and mourning they're weeping and mourning at Babylon's destruction. They're not weeping and mourning because of their sins. They're not weeping and mourning because of Babylon's sins. They're weeping and mourning because they have lost their cargo. They're weeping and mourning because their economy has been disrupted. They're weeping and mourning because all their goods are gone. They're weeping and mourning because Babylon's vision of life, which was their vision of life, has been swept away. You know, when we know we've drunk the Kool-Aid, we know we've drunk from Babylon's cup, when we fear the same losses Babylon fears. Comfort, status, access, admiration. When financial security and the loss of that becomes what we fear most, the lifestyle we thought we deserved, or the future we imagined our kids would have. And that's a tender one, isn't it? I was talking with some pastors once, and one of the pastors was really brutally and refreshingly honest. He said his son is like headed towards ministry or contemplating, and he said, I don't know if I want to encourage him toward that life. And we all discussed it, and we all felt it. And it was an honest admission that the vision of the good life that we have for our kids, or he had is for his kid, and we could all relate in some ways, was shaped more by Babylon than it was the Bible. In other words, we're saying, it caused us to ask the question, am I more afraid that my child will suffer because they follow Christ completely, or that they will succeed while learning to live with Christ on the margins of their life? That's the question. What if following Jesus completely causes me to give up blank that I always wanted, that I pictured my life having? See, whatever that blank is, if that blank is Babylon's vision of the good life, then we have become drunk on her. And so, revelation has to break the spell. Babylon says, this is life. And John's vision says, you are drunk. Babylon says, this is freedom. And John's vision says, you are addicted. Babylon says, this will ease the pain a little. And John's vision says, this is judgment waiting to happen. Which brings us to the final point. Babylon is beautiful, Babylon is intoxicating, but Babylon is also doomed. Look at verse 8, chapter 18, verse 2. An angel cries out, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. Fallen. The city that seemed to be so permanent, so immovable, is fallen. And isn't that always the case? That the thing that seems to be the most permanent and the most immovable is the most tempting. And notice how suddenly it falls. Verse 8, plagues come and wipe it out, quote, in a single day. Verse 10, in a single hour your judgment has come. Verse 11, in a single hour all this wealth has been laid to waste. In a single hour. You know, people talk about Santa Barbara. I have said this about Santa Barbara and talking to people about whether or not they should take the risk and purchase a home. You know, rich people are always going to want to move here. And because of that, your home value will always be worth something. And therefore, it's always a good investment. In other words, there's kind of this sense that Santa Barbara has somewhat of an immunity or a buffer when economic catastrophe hits the rest of the country. Now, there may be something to that, but do you hear the danger? Do you hear the danger in saying, if I build a life here, it really can't come apart? If I put my eggs in this basket, then it's going to be secure. People say that about Santa Barbara. People say that about America. You know, America is a nation that has an economy that's too large to fail, a military that's too strong, institutions that are too deep, influence that is too global, technology that is too advanced. You know, they said the exact same thing about Rome. And where is Rome? Yet fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She is fallen. And notice how it falls. Look at chapter 17. Turn back to chapter 17, verse 16. It says, the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. Now the 10 horns represent the kings of Rome and the earth. And so what we see is that the powers that Babylon trusted, the beast that she sat on, the kings that she made love with, they are the ones who do what to her? Hate her, make her desolate, naked, and devour her flesh and burn her up. In other words, Babylon is destroyed from within. The powers Babylon trusted become the powers that consume her. The things that built her destroy her. And the people she propped up. A city built on appetite eventually will be eaten by appetite. And we see this happening in our culture in various ways. Think about the universities. Like humanities, we're supposed to be a place where we loved and promoted truth and beauty and text and tradition and memory and language and wisdom. But for the last generation, people have been taught to look at these things through one lens and one lens only, and that is through cynicism, skepticism, and that they're all about power. Now, I think there are power dynamics going on in texts. But when you teach a people that that's all that's going on, and you teach them to mistrust everything, you shouldn't be surprised when your departments are shutting down because no one wants to study the text anymore. Sheffield, one of the best religious studies departments in the world at one time, no longer exist. Because they taught their students, these texts are just text. And they're just text by the powerful. And now they're surprised that no one wants to go into religious studies. You saw off the limb that you're sitting on. Babylon devours herself from the inside. Recently, we saw this in an interview. This came to kind of expression in an interview where Ross Douwet was interviewing Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel, if you don't know, is one of the most influential billionaires the last 20 years. Founded PayPal. And Ross Douwet asked him the question, do you want the human race to endure? And Thiel kind of demurred. And whatever was going on with that, one thing became really clear in his answer, and that is that he doesn't simply want us to become better humans, but that we would transcend our humanity. In other words, his vision for humanity is no more humanity. That technology would enable us to leave humanity behind, where there's no more us. Babylon cannibalizes herself. The beast we ride becomes the beast that consumes. And so, chapter 18, verse 4, we are told, come out of her. Come out of her, my people, lest you take part in her sins, lest you share in her plagues. Now, to be clear, come out of her does not mean hate the good, true, and the beautiful. It doesn't mean hate aspects of culture that and creativity that are done by image bearers of God in ways that that develop and steward the things of the earth as God intended. But it is saying come out of her does mean don't belong to her. Don't fully identify with her. Don't let Babylon shape your vision. Don't let Babylon define success or significance for you. Don't let Babylon teach you what your children need or what you cannot live without. Come out of her. Come out of her, my people. And there's grace in those words. Think about that. My people. Why does God say my people? Because the Lamb has already gone into the place of judgment. The Lamb was executed by the beast outside of the city gates. And by his blood, he purchased us for another city. That's why Babylon isn't the final city in the book of Revelation. No. In chapter 21, we read, I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. There is another woman, another city. And she is better. You see, whereas Babylon had its splendor, the new Jerusalem has glory. And where Babylon has a golden cup, the New Jerusalem has a river of life. And where Babylon can make a name, it provides an opportunity for you to make a name for yourself, the New Jerusalem, it writes the name of God on your very forehead. And where Babylon offers comfort, the New Jerusalem offers a God who will come and wipe the tears off of your face. Where Babylon offers fleeting pleasure, the New Jerusalem offers soul satiation. So come out. Come out to the New Jerusalem. Come out to the city whose builder and architect is God, and come to the Lamb who was slain for you. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.